stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Someday I'll figure out just exactly what the fill is I'm supposed to do on that. We got Nick. Do your last name for me. I never can get it right.
Bulaich.
Have I got you on the right, Mike? Somebody come in here and give me a push on the lever and show me how to get his microphone working right, would you please? Hello, hello, because all we got is echo on that thing. Anyway, he tells me it's Bulaich. Have we got it?
Bulaich. Just think, Bulaich.
Bulaich. Yeah, okay, we've done that before. Nick, of course, is famous for his Nick at Noon shows on Mondays here on, actually on KOMY these days.
Yep.
From right after the news till 1 o'clock, noon to 1 on Mondays. Nick's been a strong voice against fluoridation of water down in Watsonville, and as an expert in most things fluoride and all things having to do with a legal action that's going on down there to prevent this poison from getting in the water. And on the phone, Maureen Jones from San Jose, who is, I understand, an expert on all things fluoride, is on mine. I'm going to try six. I'll bet it's six. Can I count? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll see if this is this you, Maureen. Are you
it
there?
Sure is, Richard. Hi.
Good morning, young lady. How are you doing?
Good morning to you and Nick.
Okay.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi.
we're gonna try very hard to keep from covering you up with callers through the day. Anyway, apparently this fight with trying to get water, the fluoride and water down there in Watsonville, has passed through several phases. And I'm going to just kind of turn it to Nick and let him bring us up with what's going on and up till now. And then we'll talk about some of the do's and don'ts of fluoride. And then I hope to be able to swing this conversation around to what has been done and can be done about it. Does that sound like a reasonable way
Very
to do
good.
This?
Very good.
Okay, guys. So, Nick, why don't you go ahead and kick this off? Let us know where we're at on this.
Okay. I mean, let me just for the listening audience explain the concept of fluoridation. And the idea here is what you're adding is a chemical, a substance to the drinking water at a ratio of one part per million. So you're just getting, if you have a million drops, you're adding one drop to it. If you have a million drops of water, you are adding one drop of this chemical. Now, the proponents of it say that's all they need. That's enough, allegedly, to do what they want it to do. So, just to give people each side, the pro viewpoint is that they say that the reason to add it in is it fights tooth decay. And the antis say, well, we say a lot of things. One, we say it doesn't work. And the other thing is that we say that it actually causes harm to your body.
Well, I'm an old guy, as we all know. I've been around since,
You dinosaurs. Still look good, Richard.
Yeah, I've been around since the dinosaurs. Where I grew up in Arizona, we had apparently a lot of fluoride in the water because we had a lot of kids I went to school with had a problem with their teeth. They had brown teeth, and they were forever having to raise money and go to these dentists to get all this brown stuff off their teeth. How did we get from there to where we are today? I mean, are you familiar with that old thing and how that worked?
I think that's a territory that Maureen could handle quite well.
Right. Yes, that's called either Texas teeth or Colorado brown stain, and both are dental fluorosis.
And is that a product of fluoride?
Absolutely. That's the product of the natural occurring calcium fluoride, for which the maximum contaminant level is 4 drops out of a million rather than the 1 drop out of a million that's set for artificial fluoridation with industrial waste. So well, that shows you that even the calcium fluoride is very, very toxic to teeth if you're getting that level of around 2 to 4 drops out of a million concentration. And that's the natural fluoride.
Yeah, it seemed to me that somewhere along the line that stopped happening, so I'm assuming that the The company, there was a company town I lived in, but they apparently did something with the water system.
Yes, they learned to blend different water sources to lower the concentration of natural calcium fluoride in the water. So they'll as technology advanced and the plumbing became more widespread, various cities, they'd simply join them all together and dilute it.
I see. But at that time, nobody was touting it as good, but apparently it was too much, so they had to back it off some.
Absolutely.
Because I've been back there, and I haven't seen that again, so.
Right.
I assume that they had, so they just diluted it, was what they did.
Well, there were some cities that had to abandon their original water source altogether, because it was more than the 4 parts per million contaminant level. That's the maximum contaminant level for natural fluoride is 4 parts per million.
What an ugly sound, contaminant.
Well, that's what fluoride is considered a contaminant, and it's the same category as lead and arsenic and all the other bad things in the water. And that forces the government to do a report on the status of the health effects supposedly every 3 years, because it is a contaminant. That's why it has a maximum contaminant level set for it. And the 4 parts per million is not only set for the dental fluorosis of teeth, but it's mainly set for complete crippling skeletal fluorosis of the spine.
Oh, Lord.
Because it's incredibly accumulative in the human body. It just goes right for bones.
Well, it definitely settled on teeth, because I can remember a lot of real pretty young girls that weren't real happy with the fact that their smile was to be covered all the time.
Well, yes, and the teeth are just the visible end of the skeleton. What you see, what you can see going on with the teeth is going on like crazy in the rest of the skeleton.
Well,
there's no difference.
Then, Maureen, what in the world is Watsonville now? Apparently, there is, in their water system, there's naturally no chlorine or fluoride.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they want to add a contaminant to the water that's not already there.
Yeah, there might be a very, very minuscule amount of calcium fluoride, like 0.1, maybe.
I think it's
0.2.
Actually like about 0.2.
Yeah, and that's normal for most waters, and some of that even might be simply air pollution washing down into the water sources. But anyway, it's there. But what they're piling on top of that is definitely what we call product substitution. They're not putting the natural occurring calcium fluoride on top of what's already in your water. They're adding something that's far more toxic. In fact, if you want to know just how far more toxic, it takes 20 times more of the natural calcium fluoride to kill guinea pigs than it does any of the 3 water fluoridation chemicals. In other words, it's 20 times easier. Takes 20 times less of the fluoridation chemicals to kill guinea pigs, what we call the LD50, lethal dose for 50%. That's a scientific term, it's a scientific process, and this was done years ago, and they've known loud and clear for that one species of mammal that there is a huge difference biochemically between natural calcium fluoride and what they use to fluoridate water with.
Well, okay, besides what we already know about government is that they do things because we have the most efficient government money can buy. Obviously, somebody's paying these people through campaign contributions or something to put fluoride in the water. But other than that, what are they doing? Why are they doing this?
Well, they're defending a public health policy that has absolutely backfired in their face. They endorsed this. The public health people endorsed this into the water in 1950, believe it or not. You know, that was a long time ago.
In 1950, they decided to start putting contaminants in the water in Watsonville.
That's when they endorsed it.
In Watsonville.
They did some test studies even before that. But then in 1950, the dental experts and the public health people, hand in hand, endorsed a nationwide policy of water fluoridation, and they've defended it tooth and nail ever since. They will not back down. This is the one issue where science is supposed to stand dead still for 60 years, and like nothing has changed in their mind. Never mind how much more we're getting through the food system and our drinks and pharmaceuticals and processed foods and through air pollution. Never mind all the changes that have happened in 60 years. For them, the science is dead in the water. They just keep on defending a 55-year-old public health policy no matter what.
Well, okay, this 55-year-old policy, does that say that it's okay for there to be this one part per million? Therefore,
yes, that is the policy.
That was the decision that it's okay to be there.
Right.
That's the policy they are defending.
Okay, and so the people that are pushing for fluoride are doing what? They're taking that one part per million and they're saying, okay, here's a place to put fluoride where it wouldn't otherwise be?
Well, of course. Now, what they're doing now, in my opinion, is that because of the massive amounts of hip fracture and arthritis and various other constant chronic diseases that this is causing, thyroid effects, that now they're absolutely desperate to fluoridate everybody in the United States so that there's no more comparison between cities. If you don't have any more control cities, you're less likely to be nailed for harm in a court of law. And that's what it's coming down to eventually.
Oh, just about the time you get to think that things can't get any more convoluted. It's a comparative analysis study that they're trying to avoid.
Yeah, they've almost achieved their goal. They've fluoridated all the big cities. One of the lobbyists in Sacramento 10 years ago told me that California mandate in 1995 was all about getting Los Angeles. Los Angeles was the only large city left that was not fluoridated. And they had a tough time with that one because the kids in L.A. had less tooth decay than fluoridated San Francisco. Well, you can't have that. You can't have glaring comparisons showing your big cities, your kids are doing better than the fluoridated. So that was the whole push behind the California mandate was really about the city of Los Angeles and San Diego.
Okay, so now we got the legal aspects, so people can't get sued for serving up lousy water. But where else is there? It's always follow the money. So
yes.
Where's the money? Where else is the money in it?
Well, heavens, open up your Yellow Pages under Dennis. Can you even find an ad that doesn't include cosmetic dentistry on the ad nowadays? 20, 25 years ago, that was a very rare part of a dental ad. Well, now it's all of the ads. And this is the porcelain veneers, fluoride makes teeth just as fracture prone as it makes bone. You've got crowns to put on teeth. You've got bleaching. You've got because there's usually changes in the dental arch. The fluoride interferes with the bone that holds the teeth, interferes with the full development of that bone. It's called the alveolar bone. And this alveolar bone cannot develop fully. The teeth come in very crowded. I have some very wonderful stats on the fact that it's also connected with malocclusion, crooked teeth. And so you've got zillions of kids on braces. I'm sure not all of those are fluoride related, but I see in my collection that it's a very good part of the issue.
Maureen, you got to know that there's people in our listening audience, and most certainly there's a part of me that just wants to turn away from that. I mean, it's like.
Well, you asked me where the money was for the dentist, and I'm trying to answer that question.
Wait a minute. I'm not challenging you. I'm not challenging you. What I'm trying
Richard.
To say is that And that's a tough pill to swallow.
And I don't think the dentists even know it. Here's the hook. I'm not even saying that the dentists are aware of this. I don't think they ask questions. I don't think they want to know. I'm sure that they don't close their door to 15 kids this year who need braces. They're going to treat those kids. They're going to fix their dental fluorosis. They have to wait until the kid's about 19 or 20 to do that. But let's face it. Cosmetic dentistry, I mean, look at the teeth of the children on the TV ads. You will see these big, chalky, middle, upper teeth. And I've seen it so many times, and it's so apparent. And usually it's the upper, middle teeth, and they overjet, and you know they're going to need the braces. You know, eventually they're going to need cosmetic dentistry to whittle them down to the right size. The teeth actually, because those teeth sometimes are far out of proportion to the rest of the teeth in the front. And these are the ones that are affected the worst by fluoride.
Got it.
And so you, once you start glancing at children's teeth and start looking at the TV ads, you will fall down. It's everywhere. And the dental community is silently sitting back, just taking in all these cosmetic orthodontic kids and fixing their teeth and not saying anything about, I don't think they even read their own journal.
But so they don't.
I don't think they know. I don't think they care to know.
That's what I'm
ignorance
getting from
is
you, is
bliss.
It? Yeah, got it.
So you can't, and the truth is also that the dentists, they have been absolutely betrayed by their own trade association, the American Dental Association. These dentists, you know, they go through dental school, they take their loans out with the American Dental Association, they get their home mortgages, they get their liability insurance, their MasterCard, everything through the American Medical Association. How many of those dentists are going to stand up and say, what are you doing on this public health policy? I mean, this is outrageous. This doesn't work. These teeth just almost shatter when you put a drill to them. They don't have the same elasticity as a normal tooth, because fluoride goes after the protein part of the tooth and the bone, what we call elasticity.
That makes them all brittle and everything, so they break up.
Exactly. And all through the literature on bone, they're very, very open about the fact that it's a bone embrittler.
Okay. We've got most of the stuff that's bad about fluoride. And I'm going to have you hold on a few minutes because we got to take a break. We got to run some commercials. So I'm putting her on hold. I hope I don't mess this whole thing up. And then I'm going to look at the engineer in there and see if she's ready to run some commercials. Are we ready to go? Is everything set? The call in lines for those folks that want to participate in this. I have some comments, questions for a Marine or Nick. Call in lines for 479-1080, 477-1340. The fax number is 475-2967. And, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure that I haven't created more of a mess than I intended to today. I was hoping to get some of this stuff cleared up. And maybe I just haven't been paying close enough attention to what Nick's been talking to me about. But I'm certainly getting my eyes open to some of this this morning. And the next thing I want to do is I want to do some more of that follow the money stuff. Yeah. Right now, I think it'd be a real good time for us to run some spots and see if we can't pay for some of this airtime. So I will be back in just a few minutes.
If you think you missed the boat on low mortgage rates, think again. This is Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland with more good news for homeowners and home buyers. There are still mortgage loan programs that offer low rates and lower payments than you can possibly imagine. If your goal is to save money on mortgage payments, pull cash out for any reason, or to pay your home off early, please call Pacific Inland today at 475-2600. That's Pacific Inland at 475-2600, licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
In 1912, after months in the snow and ice, a British team arrived at the South Pole, hoping to be the first. But there they found a tent with a note from the Norwegians who had arrived the month before. Comerica Bank knows it takes speed and insight to succeed. So when a window of opportunity opens, we're open to it. Example, an importer got a contract to supply an international sporting event. With the event deadline approaching, we confirmed the sale, then quickly structured a trade finance program so our customer could close this significant deal and continue growing successfully. As the nation's number one business bank, our responsiveness and local decision-making can help you make history. Call 888-419-1234 today. Comerica Bank. We listen. We understand. We make it work.
Member FDIC, Equal Opportunity Lender. Comerica ranks first nationally in commercial loans as a percent of total assets by Sheshonoff Information Services, 2003.
Hello, this is Tom Quinn, the host of Perspectives Radio Show. Every Saturday at noon, we give you cutting-edge news about current events. We interview well-known experts on a variety of issues, so listen in this Saturday from noon to 1 to Perspectives. Thank you.
Is changing daily. Old familiar views don't seem to work anymore, and that's why there's Embassy of the New World Order, the one and only foreign affairs radio broadcast where all politics are global, Sundays at 11 a.m. Greetings and salutations. I'm Cyril Vatonsky, your progressive multicultural ambassador of the New World Order, and I am here to offer you tools and information to better navigate through murky waters of international politics. I will gladly listen to your opinions and will be happy to tell you where you are wrong. Join me for the free weekly foreign affairs seminar, the Embassy of the New World Order, Sundays at 11 a.m. on KSL.
It must be, it has to be, with that big sound it's gotta be, KSCO.
Okay, we're back to do some more. Right now, I want to check and make sure I've still got Maureen out there. Maureen, you still there?
I sure am.
And Mike wants to ask about what toothpaste you'd recommend. I'm assuming he has, oh my goodness, did I just cut her off? How did I do that? I just cut her off. Find that lady for me. What did I do?
I think she'll call back.
Well, I need to click her twice. Now they tell me I've got some sort of echo. Mike, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, Mike, well, I lost our expert, so
okay,
I don't know what to do.
I can take my answer off the air. Can I take my answer off the air?
Sure.
I'd just like to know what kind of alternative toothpaste I can buy at the health food store that's reliable, that's good for your teeth. And
well, there's Tom's toothpaste. You'll see anyone.
Oh, yeah, I think I've seen that before. Yeah,
anyone that's really not carrying having fluoride in it, they're basically going to be really advertising it to let you know. So you.
But what kind of ingredients would I be looking for in a toothpaste?
They'll be saying they'll pretty much say fluoride free.
Oh, just the. But what is the ingredient they use though?
I think it's sodium.
Sodium, okay.
Monosodium phosphate, flosphate, something like that. Forgetting the exact words off of it. If we get Maureen back, she'll be able to give you the clearer names. But definitely Tom's. I know for sure Tom's. You can find that in not in all stores, but there's definitely stores that carry. I've seen them even locally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll get the answer from her right now for you off the air. And they tell me if I click this twice, I won't ever lose you again.
Yeah.
I apologize, Maureen.
No problem.
I'm the resident idiot, but I got you back.
I just pressed redial, and I was right back on.
Toothpaste. What toothpaste would you recommend to Mike?
I would recommend no fluoride toothpaste whatsoever. I like OxyFresh, which there's a tree tea. There's so many brands from health food stores that do not have the fluoride in it. You're really, like Nick said, Tom's of Maine carries a non-fluoride. There's a lot of choice. You don't have to use that either. You can use just baking soda. You can use nothing. And pick a mouthwash that you like. You can floss and brush and save all that time spitting out the toothpaste and cleaning your brush. Don't use any toothpaste unless you want to. But also understand on the subject of toothpaste that children ingest and absorb, and so do adults, 2 brushings a day with the fluoride toothpaste, you get a 0.5 milligram of fluoride, whether you like it or not. And that is half the dose that they want you to get per day through the water system.
So that's without even drinking water.
Exactly. That's why they say that children in non-fluoridated cities are already getting that so-called precious 1 milligram of fluoride a day through the toothpaste and through the food chain.
That's already fluoridated. That's if they're using fluoride toothpaste.
Exactly.
Got it. Well, I'm kind of lucky in this regard because my teeth come out at night. You know that one.
But here's another one, though. One lousy chicken stick. Kids eat chicken sticks all the time. Contains 0.6 milligrams of fluoride, which is more than a pediatrician can prescribe all the way up to age 6.
Hey, that's that.
Do that one again.
One chicken stick.
One chicken stick
is like a prescription drug for kids all the way up to 6.
For fluoride.
Yes.
And how would the fluoride get into the chicken stick?
Because when they eat their meal or mash or whatever it is, the fluoride settles on their bone exactly like human beings. And then they have these machines that mechanically scrape the meat off the bone, taking the fluoride with it, sometimes even grinding up small bones with it. If anybody, the mothers out there who fed their babies chicken baby food, you can feel that grittiness in the chicken baby food. And that is the ground up bone, and the baby food is just roaring with fluoride.
So even if we can kick this fluoride out of Watsonville and the other cities, we're still going to be having to look for it from all kinds of other sources.
You have to go to the websites and find out that you cannot go drinking white grape juice or anything that's sweetened with white grape juice because they use fluoride insecticides on the grape.
Oh, my goodness. That's unbelievable.
I'm giving you the most extreme examples. And if I was going to tell a parent to stay away from two things in the food chain, I would say watch out for white grape concentrate or juice and watch out for mechanically processed meats that have chicken in it. Turkey was not as bad, not anywhere near as bad for some reason. I don't know why, but it was the chicken that was just loaded with fluoride.
That's probably the meat-to-bone ratio. Jim's on the line and has a quote and wants to know if you know where the quote came from. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, what is the quote that you wanted now?
Yeah, where does this come from? Keep out of the reach of children under the age of 6. If more than used for brushing is accidentally swallowed, get medical help or contact a poison control center right away.
Yes, that was the warning on all fluoride-containing toothpaste that was mandated by the FDA in 1997.
Right. It's not was, though. It is. It's still there.
In the beginning, the phrase began with, as with all fluoride toothpaste. I've got a photo from AIM Toothpaste, where it started out by saying that. Eventually, the toothpaste companies dropped that little bombshell phrase so that now when you read that warning, you really are not told that this is what they're talking about, fluoride. You can't really tell anymore what part of the toothpaste is the one for which the warning is put on there.
Absolutely unbelievable.
And I'm...
Yeah. You got to remember though that the dental association is the same group of people that told us that it's perfectly fine to load our mouths up with mercury.
Well, Jim, you've got a nation.
They want to tell us that we can't eat tuna fish because it has too much mercury in it, but they say it's perfectly fine to just load your teeth with it.
But
they did that with nickel too, didn't they? Didn't they used to use nickel for tooth surfaces and stuff, and the gums would recede away from the nickel?
I don't know about that one. That's new.
No, I was my understanding is that some of the stuff they used to cap teeth and stuff was nickel. And the gums would just absolutely head out. Oh.
Run away.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Apparently, there are just some people that are allergic to nickel. It wasn't everybody. But
interesting.
Yeah, amazing. But this fluoride thing still got me spun.
I'd like to make a suggestion as to a good toothpaste, though. Regular old salt and baking soda.
There you go. Yep.
Well, that's what I was raised on. I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't go down to the store and buy. We used to go to the store and buy food. We didn't go down to the store and buy stuff to clean our teeth. We had baking soda.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, well, thank you very much for the call, Jim. And that's a good one.
You know, Richard, the thing I was thinking of, there's really three big questions at this time for people out there listening. And I've thought about these leading up to the show because I knew I was going to be on here. And this is what I think people should be responding to, and they should call in here, and we'd like to hear their opinion on this. And really the first one is should the water supply be used as a source of medication? I mean, that's a big issue. Is you have something, you're adding a substance, even if it did work. Let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, which I don't want to do, but just for this hypothetical, let's say that it did work, adding the substance to the water. Do you want to use your water supply as a deliverer of medication? See, that's a big question. So people have to think carefully about that, because what's next?
Right.
Is it putting a heart pill in there?
Well,
happens if you have a good heart? See, so what happens if you have good teeth? Do you need this? That's assuming even if it works. So that's a big question for the people. And then let's say that it does work. If this substance even did work, what do you want of it? What is expected of the substance? So at a minimum, would you want it's proven to work and is free of excess contaminants, so it's not containing something else like lead and arsenic, which I'll get to later regarding it. And the big one now, the big issue is what we have at the stage we're at now is the people of Watsonville voted on this issue, and the people of Watsonville decided not that they didn't want fluoride, but what they decided was if you are going to add something like that, that it's been proven to work and free of excess contaminants. So the big issue now is does the people's vote mean anything?
Good point. That's
what people have to think about, the listeners out there. Do you think your vote should mean something?
I have a hard time believing everybody doesn't believe their vote should mean something. Aren't they having some sort of a substantial election halfway around the world today, and it's all about people's votes meaning
exactly.
something?
Exactly, and people getting threatening to get killed thousands of miles away, and they're like, still out there voting.
Yeah, I can't imagine that we'd be providing something for somebody halfway around the world that we don't do ourselves. I mean, that's...
Good point.
Wow.
Yes, and, you know, legality of the ordinance that was put on the ballot was never questioned by anyone. I mean, they never put that ordinance, they never pulled it off the ballot, said, no,
right.
This is wrong. It was clearly approved and allowed to be on the ballot for the vote of the people to decide.
That's a good point. And in fact, see, this thing goes back. We're almost at 4.5 years. This is back in July of 2001. The Watsonville City Council voted to look for money in order to fluoridate.
Well, I think you and I talked about it on the first time
we
on the radio about 3 years ago.
Yes, it was probably about that time. It was before the election. I believe it was. Might have been after. No, it was after the election. So it's probably 2.5 years ago. Something like that. So what happened is I'll make the, because we've covered this before, I'll make the history quite brief. So the council was seeking money in order to fluoridate, because the way the law is worded is it's not a funded mandate. And in my mind, it's not even a mandate. We can get into that later as far as the legal aspect. So a city cannot be forced to use local funds. They can't pass this on to the ratepayers, the local people.
Got it.
So they look for outside money. That's the way the law is worded. So if all of a sudden these nonprofit agencies pop up that go around offering money, and where they're getting money is probably very suspicious. So the city sought funds, and they got an offer of funds from this California Dental Association Foundation, which is allegedly a nonprofit organization out of Sacramento. So they offered the money to the city. City accepted it. The initial contract offer had a requirement there. The city had to fluoridate for an additional 9 years at their cost, which is now bordering on, well, it's not bordering on, it's illegal.
Got it.
The city couldn't do this. So supporters the opponents to this issue, and I was part of it, there was a lot of people involved locally. We gathered signatures, put an item on the ballot, in order to set specific criteria in the issue of adding something to the water to treat humans.
Right.
And then you had the big election go on. So that's what I'm fast forwarding this months, obviously.
Got it.
And you had the big election. The fascinating thing is the proponents of fluoridation, who were the ones against our measure, were all out of towners. They were all out of towners. It was not local people coming forward. The person that was chairing their campaign lives in La Selva Beach. The person that was their treasurer lives in Soquel. So it's these people coming forward and saying, oh, you got to put this thing in your water, but it's not going in their water. Well, the voters weren't fooled by this, and the voters passed the measure. So the measure was passed, and it's just as Maureen said, it was never challenged. Nobody came forward and filed a lawsuit and tried to keep it off the ballot. After it was passed, nobody came forward and tried to file a lawsuit saying it was illegal. Instead, what happened was the city canceled the contract, which they had a legal right to do. There was no dispute there. And this dental foundation offers the money again. They wait a few months. They offer the money again. They take out the part about the 9 additional years of city paying for it, because they probably recognized they didn't have a legal leg to stand on. They offered the money again, and then the state came along. The Department of Health Services came along and issued a compliance order to the city, and then it started getting into legal things.
Got it. Well, we skipped forward a little bit from where I wanted to go right now, because I got a question from Maureen, and we got to do a break.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw the question out there, and then we'll get the answer to it when we come back. But interestingly, I went to dinner at some friends' houses up in Corralitos the other night, and discovered that for whatever reason they found the one place on the whole planet where you can't dig a well and get water. I pretty much figured there was water everywhere up here, and they get their water from Watsonville. And they do a little bit of ag around their house. And I'm curious what fluoride in the water is going to have to do with their ag in the years to come. Is it going to stay in there? Is it going to pollute the food? Or is it no longer organic? All of that stuff. So we're going to get to that right after the break. I hope I don't cut you off this time. I'm going to put
that's
you
right.
on hold.
I'd be happy to answer that one.
Okay, we'll grab it in a minute. In the meantime, why don't we take a couple minutes, listen to a word from our sponsor, and we will be right back.
Jim Hart's Painting, licensed and insured with over 20 years' experience. With Jim's superior taste in products like Sherwin-Williams, be assured that quality comes first. No job is too large or too small. They all deserve the best. Sherwin-Williams paints applied by Jim Hart's professional crew is 100% guaranteed. Give Jim Hart a call today, 408-267-7228. For a new look, call Jim Hart's Painting, 408-267-7228.
Divorced fathers, guess what we're saying about your children's mother? Hello, I'm Steve Ashley, host of the Divorced Fathers radio program, with an invitation for you to join us Friday evenings at 7 p.m. on AM 1080 KSCO. The Divorced Fathers radio program, Friday evenings at 7 p.m. on AM 1080 KSCO.
Brought to you by New York Life Insurance. Call Stephen Arciaga or Desmond Carreras at 408-452-6069 or 831-595-8702.
Hi, this is Rush Limbaugh for the Excellence in Broadcasting Network right here on Talk Radio AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. I got news, opinions, information, lots of timely trivia, but most of all, broadcast excellence, a show unlike any other. We talk about all kinds of things, and I'm inviting you to call and share your opinions and ideas, no matter how outrageously to the left they might be. After all, that's what Talk Radio's all about. That's the Rush Limbaugh program, weekday mornings here on Talk Radio AM 1080 KSCO.
They make us laugh, improve our health, offer love and companionship. What are they? Animals, of course. If you're interested in animals, then tune in to Kitty and Rihanna's Animal Talk Show, Sundays at 2 p.m. on AM 1080 KSCO. We talk about all animals from A to Z. That's Animal Talk with Kitty Fields and Rihanna, Sundays at 2 p.m. on AM 1080 KSCO.
Santa Cruz.
See, dead air. The worst thing you can do on a radio station is dead air. I was sitting here talking to Nick about one thing and another. Okay, let's check and make sure we have not lost Maureen this time. Are you still there, young lady?
I am. Yes, I am.
Okay, what about my friends? Are they going to be able to grow organic food once this fluoride's put in the water in Watsonville?
Okay, it's kind of a two-part answer.
I'll take both parts.
Yes, the only products or agricultural products that I know of that will actually take fluoride up through the roots are tea plants and possibly tobacco, because there are definite quantities of fluoride in tea and tobacco. The greater part would be what is sprayed and remains on the leafy types of vegetables, in the stems or that part, the accumulation on, and I don't know if they do that kind of agriculture watering of products. I think it's mostly ground irrigation, but I've seen those big spray things out there too. So that part is more difficult to answer.
Okay, so the big sprinkler setups that they have for these fields, strawberries and stuff like that.
That would certainly leave fluoride residues on there, and how much that can even accumulate into the plant is completely unknown to me.
Okay, what does that do to that organic label? Does it affect that at all?
I'm not so sure that it does.
Okay.
I'm not so sure that it does. For one thing, a lot of the, well, this is, you're talking about your friend's property, but
right.
Most of the places like Salinas Valley and everything, that water comes down through the pipeline. I don't know. I think it's the Feather River Project or whatever from up north. That water will not be fluoridated. That's not part of the issue.
Okay. It's just the stuff, the only water they're wanting to fluoridate is the stuff that people are going to be drinking.
Yes, in the city water systems.
Well, how effective can people be about getting that out of their life, assuming that the worst happens and the litigation that we're going to talk about next hour fails?
Okay.
And they start pumping this fluoride into the water system there in Watsonville.
First of all, normal filters do not remove fluoride. Charcoal filters do not. You have to go so far as the reverse osmosis system just to get 85% of the fluoride out of the water.
Will bottled water relieve that concern?
Normally, bottled water will say whether it's fluoridated or not, or you have to call the company and ask for a readout of what's in their water. Beware of Trinity water. Trinity bottled water is sold as a supplement. It's got almost 4 parts per million fluoride in it.
Well, we're back to brown teeth again.
Yes, we are.
Wow.
Yes,
you know,
we are.
There's a good point that previous caller brought up, and it's not just talking about like spraying irrigating your orchard or irrigating your crops. It's with the organic label. And this was, when this issue was going on in Watsonville, there was a friend of mine who had a coffee shop. And he was a real big pusher of organic coffee, and he made sure to advertise that. Now the thing is his coffee is organic,
right?
But you got to use water to make the
fluoridated
coffee. And he had the filters. He was real good about this, and he has fantastic coffee. And he had the filters, and as Maureen was saying, the carbon filters to keep out a lot of the other items that might ruin his labeling of organic coffee. But he said, what am I going to do now? And what are all these other coffee shops going to do? Are they going to put in reverse osmosis and still advertise organic coffee? Now, you see, I don't think so. I would imagine that if you were to go to coffee shops in fluoridated cities, that you'd find out they're advertising organic coffee, but you're not getting or an organic cup of coffee.
You're absolutely right.
You're getting organic coffee beans.
Yeah, you're getting organic coffee beans, but you're not getting organic water.
One step even further on that coffee issue is that there are 2 studies from the Journal of Dental Research that show that tea, Coca-Cola, coffee, anything containing caffeine, guess what? Shows that the fluoride stays in the bloodstream twice as long when it's delivered to the body in a caffeine substance as compared to a glass of water. And that is not a good thing. That allows it to much more affect the organs and other tissues of the body. Nature works very, very hard to get fluoride out of the bloodstream as quickly as possible and stick it in the bones and get rid of it through the kidneys and get it out the best. But even still, adults accumulate 50% of all the fluoride they ingest. It stays. Infants accumulate 87% of all the fluoride they ingest. It goes to their little growing bones, which are clicking along, remodeling much more quickly, actively than adult non-growing bones.
Would you do me a favor? And it wasn't that I wasn't paying attention, because I was. But in the off chance somebody out there wasn't paying attention from the beginning of that, would you walk through that again?
You bet.
How much of that stuff stays with me?
50% stays in a healthy adult. If your kidneys have any kind of diminished function, it's going to be more than 50%. An infant in 1994, I own these studies. Don't think that I got these off the internet or somebody told me this stuff. I read them, I highlight them, I lift them right out of the San Francisco Medical Dental Library, and it's 87% for infants. And then they say, well, gee, this is a very different reaction than for adults. We really need to do more research on this business from the standpoint of infants. They don't even know what they're doing.
Lord,
nor do they care.
Well, that's the part that's most disturbing about government.
I've got something back in 1983 that says we need more research on what fluoride does to infants. Hello, this is 2005. It has not been done.
Never been done, but they're still pumping the fluoride, you know.
Nor has there ever been a study of what's happening to children's bones whose teeth already look like tar balls.
Yeah.
Fluorosis, dental fluorosis.
Here
you've got a red flag as big as a football field of 30% of kids in the nation have dental fluorosis, some at very severe levels, but even for the kids at severe levels, they've never given a hoot about isolating these kids and taking a look at what's going on with the rest of their skeleton.
So the government is doing this because the people that give them, donate money to their campaigns want them to do it. So that's why they're doing it.
I think that when you say government, let's name it. It's the United States Public Health Service and the Center for Disease Control.
Yeah, and your city councilman, state legislators, all those guys, government.
Well, everybody assumes, all the way back, everybody assumes that the Public Health Service knew what they were doing when they endorsed this.
I hate to bring up the parallel, so I'm gonna tap on it very lightly.
Uh-huh.
But as an anti-helmet law person, I can tell you that the statistical jargon that you get that promotes helmet laws are equally unfounded.
Exactly.
And I live with that. I live with that every day, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
You.
This is not something I gotta imagine. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
One of my favorite communications on that subject, and then we're gonna get away from it quick, was I wrote to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and I says, look, I'm curious as to how much effect the weight of that 3-pound helmet that you guys like so much has on a child, you know, of what age, what body weight, you know, an 8-year-old, for example, that weighs 75 pounds. And they wrote back and said, we've never studied that.
Wow.
Okay, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so they do the same thing with fluoride. And this, wow. And of course, like I say, we're going to move into the next hour because we're going to talk. I want to fully go through what this legal thing is, because that is the last place for relief. We can't outbuy the people that buy the government. We just can't. The people that buy the government have an endless supply of money They get that money because anytime they need more, they just get the government to send us the bill. We have to pay them. Then they take that split, and they go back and they buy more government. That's how we've lost the right to use the roadways. That's why you can't build on your own property. That's and I think that's why we're living with fluoride. I mean, it's all becoming very clear to me that we all really have the same fight here. It's just the subjects are different.
Yes.
You know, Richard, before you take a caller there, I do want to say something. In the next hour, and I want to make sure the people stay listening, is I am going to tie the legal issue of fluoride with the helmet law.
Oh, okay, well, that'd be fine with me. I won't have a problem with that at all. I think I probably got a better judge than you did, though.
Well, I'm going to tie it together.
Nick's sitting out here from Royal Oaks and has something that he wants to say about fluoridation. Nick, are you there?
Well, theory and comment, no sense. Fluoride, after World War II, they couldn't find anything to store it in because it would rot the containers, so they diluted it with water. So now we have an idea that we know is playing with the people, diluting it with water. Do they know, or are they playing with people, not awareness? And fluoride, I think it's used as like a smoke screen. As far as the deliberateness and playing on people who don't know that, you know, say, I'm going to use a description as you walk by a chicken coop with full of chicks. I've done it, and they turn white with fright and still for a moment. And I think when you're confronted with a contaminant, a mild thing, stimulant like that in your water constantly, you're kind of changing, but you're not recovering as well. And you're just blending in with a drive, you know, the same force. That, you know, actually the citizen needs help, but they're diluting, they're driving on because the small little people, they're just.
Well, you're right. I mean, and then that actually comes back to even one of the three questions I was kind of threw out there is, I mean, should the water supply even be used as a deliverer of medication? And then if it is, should it be proven to work? See, so the thing is, you're talking about, you're getting little bits. Even if it works.
We got to come back in a minute. I've got to get, right now, I got to go right to Roy Thomas because he's got something about a barbecue. Roy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
We got 50 seconds, my friend. I know I'm supposed to get you in. I hope 50 seconds is enough.
Well, I'll work at it.
Okay.
MZ comes to our, I'm the president of the Karma River Steelhead Association. I'm right down here in Karma River Lagoon because we're about.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. They did that last year.
That's right. Well, we finally, the state's cooperating this time, but we're trying to get some fresh water in there so we don't lose the 10,000 steelhead that are in there.
Got it.
But in order for us to function, we have one fundraiser a year, and it's the Wild Game Barbecue. It's held out Los Laureles Lodge, Carmel Valley. We have hunters and depredation people providing us with fresh wild animals, all natural, no preservatives. Full of lots of minerals that Doc Wallach would like.
We got to go to news. We're going to come back at the first of the hour and pick you up again. Hold on.
Okay.
CO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
How about time out for a little fun? This goodie has been floating around for a while, author unknown. Let's talk about cows. Democrat, you have two cows. Your neighbor has none. You feel guilty for being successful. Republican, you have two cows. Your neighbor has none. So? Socialist, you have two cows. The government takes one and gives it to your neighbor. You form a cooperative to tell him how to manage his cow. Communist, you have two cows. The government seizes both and provides you with milk. You wait in line for hours to get it. It's expensive and sour. Capitalism, American style. You have two cows. You sell one, buy a bull, and build a herd of cows. Democracy. You have two cows. The government taxes you to the point that you have to sell both to support a man in a foreign country who has only one cow, which was a gift from your government. French corporation, you have two cows. You go on strike because you want three cows. You go to lunch and drink wine. Life is good. Japanese corporation, you have two cows. You redesign them so they are one-tenth the size of an ordinary cow and produce 20 times the milk. They learn to travel on unbelievably crowded trains. Most are the top of their class in cow school. German corporation, you have two cows. You engineer them so they are all blonde, drink lots of beer, give excellent quality milk, and run 100 miles per hour. Unfortunately, they also demand 13 weeks of vacation every year. And finally, Italian corporation. You have two cows, but you don't know where they are. While ambling around, you see a beautiful woman. You break for lunch. Life is good. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay's Whirling.
It's 5.5 minutes past 11 a.m. You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. I'm Aaron Bond with a quick look at your Central Coast weather and traffic. Looks like southbound 101 just north of the Baronda Road exit. We have a two-vehicle collision, a van rollover in that area. Southbound 101 is getting backed up in the Baronda Road exit area. Thanks to Ken for calling that in. We now take you back to the Saturday special and to kick it off, hour two music.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Sometimes I wish that woman was my mom. Kay Swirling, you're absolutely wonderful. And I don't say that because you put me on the air. I say that because you're absolutely wonderful. That's got to be one of the most hysterical and spot on. two cows. I love it. Okay, Roy, talking about cows, I assume that's part of your barbecue plans?
No, cows. Only wild boar and elk and venison.
Oh, right.
Abalone and halibut and Alaskan salmon.
So when is this happening and where?
Well, it's happening November 13th, that's Sunday, 1 to 5, Los Laureles Lodge, which is a nice old resort, Carmel Valley. They donate their beautiful back lawn area for us to have our band and our barbecues. We have all the famous chefs from the peninsula are cooking, and We're trying to make it as much fun as it was the last 5 years.
Well,
we want the KSCO listeners to be there, and we've been trying. Well, Mr. Zwilling's been there half a dozen times, and his mom, Kay, and we thought we might get the morning crew to show up and have fun too, because there's dancing and eating and drinking, and there's also a silent auction. You know, we're one of the few real 501c3s, so you come to us and you only eat two bites, you can write off the whole expense to get there.
Well,
we have these night stays and dinners and donated in various restaurants and lots of good stuff to bid on. Plus, we're all happy to have donations too. If you got anybody that has something that's real good that they want to steelhead in the Central Coast, we also support Monterey Bay Salmon Trout. They're having their albacore dinner coming up pretty soon in Castroville. We're looking for everybody that's listening to come enjoy it with us.
Sounds like
any questions you have, and are you going to be there?
It's 13th is going to be a little bit of a busy day for me, which you'll hear about later, but I'll certainly make it if I can. It sounds like fun.
Somebody needs tickets, they can call D.O. Roberts or myself. D.O. Roberts is 624-1025. I'm at 625-2255. And there's Vince Torres and Henry Meyer. You can get in the phone book.
Okay, very good. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that barbecue. And I know that Michael's going to probably make it. I will definitely try to get there, and we'll see if we can recruit the morning crew for you.
Yeah, I'd like to see the morning crew there because they look like fun people, and we have a lot of fun people there.
They definitely are fun. Okay, Roy, thank you very much for the call.
All right, well, thank you.
You bet.
All right.
All right, back to business. Maureen, have I figured out how to get you back again?
Yes, I'm right here. Richard,
right.
Thank you.
You bet. Somebody named Frank called in and wanted to support my position, and I guess we lost him, and it just breaks my heart when we lose somebody that wants to support my position. that doesn't happen every day.
You got a lot of supporters, Richard.
Yeah, well, I hear that. Another caller, let's see, cell phone was cutting out, wanted to ask about the good aspects of chloride. Apparently, somebody called in and wants to know if there's anything good about fluoride, and apparently I have a little trouble believing that it can't be good.
Oh, I'd love to answer that one.
Please.
Okay. Get ready.
Anything good about fluoride, Maureen?
Okay. First of all, you have to subtract from your mindset that fluoride is good. You have to subtract all pit and fissure tooth decay, which accounts for 90% of tooth decay. Pit and fissure is what happens on the occlusion, the chewing surfaces of molars. Dentists have been using sealants for decades to fight the tooth decay here on these chewing surfaces of the molars. This is where 90% occurs. This is nothing new. In 1929, one of the first researchers on fluoride counted and listed where the cavities were occurring in the children's mouth. 95% of all the tooth decay was in the pits and grooves and fissures of the molars. So it's always been known since fluoride went into the water that it wasn't going to work for tooth decay on pits and fissures. So subtract 90% right off the top from your idea that fluoride helps kids cavities.
Got it.
Secondly, they say, oh, you must put it in the water for the poor children. Well, the Journal of Public Health Dentistry states in 1993 that 50% of United States Head Start children, which are categorized as the poor children, that they have had baby bottle tooth decay. So, of course, I went to the Medical Dental Library in San Francisco, pulled out 15 published studies on baby bottle tooth decay, and I already knew this, but they confirmed for me that fluoridation does not mitigate or help or decrease or touch baby bottle tooth decay. And put on top of that one for the a huge amount of children is the sippy cup, which is simply making the baby bottle tooth decay a longer period of risk and accelerating the damage over the years of kids all the way up to 4 years old. So take away the tooth decay of the poor children, take away 90% of tooth decay in the permanent teeth on the molars. Now you have to take away the fact that the Center for Disease Control conceded in 1999 that fluoride does not work through ingestion. At best, after you subtract bottle and pit and fissure decay, at best it works topically.
Okay, so if it's put directly on the teeth.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, but still you have to take away the pit and fissure and the baby bottle sippy cup decay. So you have to subtract those three huge categories before you even start thinking about what in the world are you putting this in the water for in the first place?
Okay, so I want to make sure I'm clear because I think I got your answer. Your answer is no, ain't nothing good about fluoride.
Ingested fluoride has absolutely no redeeming qualities whatsoever.
Okay,
it is a nasty accumulative. It is doubling the hip fractures for women. And I direct anyone to the Journal of the American Dental Association, August 12, 1992, Figure 1. And I want to repeat that because I want people to look at this. August 12, 1992, Figure 1. 100% increase in hip fractures for women if They drank fluoridated water for 20 years prior to their menopause. That is the window of injury for hip fracture. These women got double the hip fractures at age 75 if they had ingested fluoridated water for 20 years before their menopause. And this is a window of injury where the bone is still kind of actively remodeling, picking up the fluoride and brittling the bone. After the menopause, women's bones simply slow down. There is not any longer the same level of fluoride taken up into bone that will hurt the hips.
Understood.
It will still bust the wrists and other bones of the body, but it will not have the same effect on the hip. And this is the study that is covered up ruthlessly, because this is the one that raised the biggest red flag of what fluoride, and by the way, hello, these women did not even grow up on the fluoridated water. They weren't even exposed to the fluoride till it was a 50% level of accumulation. They did not even have the 87% level. So clearly the question begs, what is the condition of the bones going to be of children who were born and raised on fluoridated water, who are now the women at the menopause window of injury? Well, the answer is clear. As Dr. Timothy Johnson said on ABC 2020 the other day, after his hip fracture, hip replacement, big fluoride promoter he is, 300,000 people will need hip replacement in the coming year. 300,000 just this coming year.
Well, is that because he needs a new boat, or is that because the fluoride has done that much damage?
Done that much damage.
Good Lord.
That even keeps the hip fracture from happening. These hips are being replaced before the hip fracture actually happens. So we will never really know the full picture of how much damage fluoride is doing to hips of women who actually grew up on fluoride as kids. We will see the stats go up, of course. Not everyone's going to get their hip replaced.
Well, I think we're hard-pressed to be able to have enough time. You obviously have this subject researched at a detail that would take more than we've got on the air, but I think the point is clear, Maureen, and that is that it's a misconception at best, ought not to be mandated at worst. In fact, I think Stephen Watsonville's got a question about this. We're going to bounce a couple of callers around, and then I want to get to the legal stuff that's been going on, because I know that Nick's been working real hard on this legal, and that's an interesting story. But Stephen Watsonville had some questions.
Yeah. Hi there, Richard.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm surprised first to hear you discussing fluoride. You guys are usually so cautious about avoiding controversy with the local government.
Oh yeah, me especially.
Anyway, I do have a couple of questions. I'll ask the first one. I don't know how crowded your calls are, but I'll ask it, and then if I got time, I'll ask the second. Now, I'm one of those bozos that was just walk along in fool's heaven, thinking, well, if they fluoridate, I have Crystal Springs bottled water delivered, so I'm okay. But then I started reading about how, you know, taking a shower in fluoridated water, you can inhale the fluoridated vapor into your lungs, and of course that's the fast track to the bloodstream. So I'm just wondering, other than switching to cold baths, what sort of precautions a person can take to avoid exposure through avenues other than the tap?
You cannot. You can't avoid it. In fact, a brand new study showed that in the fluoride conference in Germany just took place 2 weeks ago, one of the most important studies presented was the fact that fluoride at the so-called optimal level significantly lowers the thyroid function of children at one part per million.
Wow.
And this is through the ingestion, I admit. However, in the old days in Germany, people used to go soak in the baths at 5 parts per million to purposely lower their thyroid function. Because when you're sick, your thyroid sometimes gets very hyperthyroid. And you need to lower the thyroid And that's what they do. They go to the baths, and they soak in the mineral baths, and that contains 5 parts per million fluoride.
So there's more than one way that that stuff can get in you and
well,
kill you.
Of course. Look at the patches. Look at the pharmaceutical industry. They purposely stick them on our skin for absorption. Fluoride's no different. It absorbs easily through the skin.
What's your follow-up, Steve?
The only comment I'd make on that is I guess that leaves us having to sip bottled water through a tube in our spacesuit.
Yeah.
There you go.
Steve, there is no escape. No one escapes this issue.
Got it, Steve.
And the only way I can emphasize the action part of this, go to fluoridealert.org and look for that petition that's up there.
Fluoridealert.org.
Yes, and there's a petition. By the way, the 7,000 professionals from the EPA are also calling for a moratorium because of the bone cancer for young boys. That's a whole nother rat nest that you don't have time for in your program. But we've already talked about the 87% accumulation in young bones, and now there is the bone cancer. This is the fourth study. But this is the icing on the cake. This is the nasty one because it was covered up by Harvard for 4 years.
Well, now this fluoride, give me that website again.
Fluoridealert.org. O-R-G.
Okay, the O-R-G, I think they got the spelling on fluoride for those of you that haven't seen it written down.
F-L-U, like flu.
Yeah, F-L-U-O-R-I-D-E.
Alert, yes.
Fluoride, I guess, is the way you'd go at that.
Yeah, fluoride.
There you go.
Alert.org.
Thor's got a question or a suggestion about something to do with this. What is that noise, Thor?
I'm on a cell phone. Is it really bad?
Oh, Lord. Get your question in or your suggestion in quick. Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Any better now?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, I was on a headset. I took it off. Okay, I'm really concerned about being forced to take something, no matter how good it's supposed to be for me or not. I mean, if I want to have the effects of fluoride, you know, I should have the option to take that on my own accord or not. So I was just wondering, you know, if they're so concerned about, you know, the poor kids and all that, that they're not going to get fluoride, why don't they just come up with a program where they can make free fluoride tablets or topical, you know, whatever the best form is. Why don't they just make that available? Anyone that wants it, they can come down to, you know, some place in the city, or they can go to their dentist and have a program set up and all that.
Well, but that's a good question.
Because that doesn't get rid of the control city.
It's the other thing, too, where it calls into question on what's this really about? Is this about treating people, or is it about getting rid of some sort of toxic waste by dumping it in the water, by diluting it?
And
that's a big issue.
I missed the first half hour, but wasn't there some legislation that the governor just signed a few months ago that's mandating that all water systems in California will be fluoridated?
That was a bill that was signed last year, and that's going to get more into the legal aspect if we want to move in toward that way.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. In fact, we need to do that next because I'm running out of time to do that. Thor, thank you very much.
So keep listening, Thor, and I'll explain that.
All right.
But right now we need to do another commercial break, so we'll be gone for a few minutes, and then we'll be right back. We'll talk some more about this fluoridation with Nick and Maureen. This is Richard Quigley, KSCO. Can we do them now? Go for the commercials.
Hello, it's me. You know, your TV. What the heck is that VCR still doing on top of me? I mean, are we back in the 80s or something? VCR, it's embarrassing. When was the last time you actually taped something with that dinosaur anyway? Get rid of it. You know why? Because you can get a TiVo digital video recorder for only $49.99 after a $150 mail-in rebate. Hello, I'm talking a TiVo box beautifully perched right on top of me, your TV, for only $49.99. So buy TiVo. You know the one with the cute little TiVo guy on the box? I love him.
Get TiVo, the first, best, and easiest to use digital video recorder for only $49.99 after rebate and service activation. TiVo automatically finds and records your favorite shows. No tapes, no timers, no worries. TiVo boxes are available at Best Buy. Buy and Circuit City for our lowest price ever. Only $49.99 after mail-in rebate plus our low monthly service fee. A $150 savings.
So get TiVo already. And please, ixnay on the Leave It to Beaver reruns.
Offer ends November 27, 2005. 1 year TiVo service commitment required. Restrictions apply. See TiVo.com for details.
The show is called The Colors of Condition, and I'm your host, Ed Martinez. But you can call me easy at KSCO AM 1080. The number over here is 479-1080. We'll be talking about how we move from no at any price to yes with condition. In politics and transportation and schools and the courts, yes with conditions instead of no at any price. Hey, we can do this. It's easy. On KSCO AM 1080, Monday night to 7 p.m.
The world is changing daily. Old familiar views don't seem to work anymore, and that's why there is Embassy of the New World Order, the one and only foreign affairs radio broadcast, where all politics are global, Sundays at 11 a.m. Greetings and salutations. I'm Cyril Vatomsky, your progressive multicultural ambassador of the New World Order, and I am here to offer you tools and information to better navigate through murky waters of international politics. I will gladly listen to your opinions and will be happy to tell you where you are wrong. Join me for the free weekly foreign affairs seminar, The Embassy of the New World Order, Sundays at 11 a.m. on KSCO.
This is your favorite radio station, KSCO, Santa Cruz, California, 1080 on your dial.
Boy, oh boy. You know, I sit around and I listen to Michael do this every week, and I forget what a skilled operator you have to be to make this whole thing run smooth. The gentleman that runs the perspective show, I know what kind of perspective is it. What's the matter with my brain? Anyway, the next hour recommended a book, The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson.
Oh, yes.
And he will be bringing that up in the next hour, so you might want to keep your radio on there, Maureen. But he said that's an incredibly good book on the subject. They'll answer a lot of the questions that we've been getting today.
It's the best 240 pages that anybody can read on this issue and all the issues like this. It explains all of the origins, the political, military, Manhattan Project origins of water fluoridation. You can't understand any of it until you read that 240 pages. It puts it all in perspective.
The Fluoride Deception by Christopher.
The Fluoride Deception. You can even read the first chapter of it on fluoridealert.org, the one we just talked about.
Got it.
The same one that has the nationwide petition. It's getting up to 7,000 signatures nationwide now. We want to have everybody go to the Internet and sign the petition. Calling for the congressional investigation and whatever to protest this absolute travesty of individual rights and clearly the rights of every charter city in the nation.
Got it. And by the way, folks, that nice lady that you're listening to, I haven't reintroduced her. We've been on the air about an hour and a half now, is Maureen Jones. She's called in on her nickel from San Jose to help us understand what's wrong with fluoride. One of the things, of course, everybody that knows me knows that my passion is the legal, because ultimately, in spite of the fact that we're not prepared for this when we go to school, the solution to all problems seem to be realistically in the courts. So somewhere along the line, as they came through this putting water into fluoride in Watsonville, and let me see if I can do this right. If I'm wrong, just cut me off, Nick, because I don't know what I'm talking about. But city council was going to fluoridate the water. You and some friends of yours got together and put together an initiative. You voted not to put anything in the water that wasn't proven safe or proven not harmful. The initiative passed. Washingtonville took it off the table for the city council took it off the table for a while. And then when everybody fell back to sleep, they put it back on the table and somebody sued. Have I got that pretty much summed up?
Pretty much. Other than the last part, I'll clean that up just a bit.
Okay.
What happened was after the city rejected the offer, which meant whatever mandate might be in effect from the state, it's off the table. Once there's no money available anywhere, there's no dispute, there's no mandate. What happened was this dental foundation, this CDAF, came along and offered money to the city again to fluoridate. And then lo and behold, came the compliance order from the state. So the state came in, is ordering the city to essentially take the money and fluoridate.
And ignore the elected will of the people.
Ignore the local results of the election.
Okay, so who were the named parties in the lawsuit?
So at that point, now you see, here's where it gets really funny, and this is what people really need to think about, is that if the ballot measure was illegal, you would have thought somebody, especially somebody like the state, would come in and sue the city and say, that thing's illegal. Well, the compliance order doesn't mention the measure. The compliance order from the state didn't come in and say, your measure is illegal and we're dragging you into court. No, they send a compliance order and say, either you fluoridate or we're going to fine you. Doesn't make any sense. If the measure is illegal, go after the measure. So it's obvious that the state didn't want to bring this into court, with the state being the initial...
moving part.
Exactly. So at this point, the thing was simple, and I had talked to some of the council members, and I'd say, the heck with it. The state hasn't gone after your measure. It's part of the municipal code. What the people passed is part of the municipal code. So all you have to do is tell the state, we're not going to break our own law, period. Clear cut. This is simple. Instead, the Watsonville City Council went this very, I consider, moronic path in seeking declaratory relief. And as you'll know that.
I know what declaratory relief is.
So they're essentially what the city is doing is asking a judge, for advice on what are our rights.
Well, whether or not they have to comply with the will of the people as expressed through the initiative process.
Right.
Got it.
So.
See how much brighter I get about things law.
Oh, I figured you'd get into there. So what happens is the city then is, essentially dragging the state into the court. So at that point, you have the city as one party and the other party is the state. Then this dental foundation seeks to intervene. And intervene, for people out there to understand, is that you want to become a party for whatever reasons, because you say it's going to affect you. The court allows the dental foundation, which is out of Sacramento, to intervene. I tried to intervene. Now, at this point, I'm the only person that's going to be drinking the water that's trying to be part of the case. Santa Cruz Superior Court denies me the right to intervene. Thus, of all the three parties, the city, the state, and the dental foundation, none of them live in the city.
Right. You're the one deemed the interloper, and everybody else is supposed to be discussing what it is that has to do with you, and you're X'd out.
That's right. I'm X'd out.
Got
so
it.
You go into the court. There's stipulations made. The city made some stipulations which were false and I believe hurt the case. And it probably wouldn't have mattered anyway in Santa Cruz Superior Court, as you might know. But the court ruled against the city and the judge...
ruled against the city.
Ruled against the city. Well, in the declaratory relief, the judge ruled that the way he ruled it is that the city had only two choices. He gave the city two choices. Either you accept this money from the dental foundation and fluoridate, or else you pay for it using your own money and fluoridate. That's what the judge did. Judge Attack.
Yeah. Well,
you're rolling your eyes.
I think he likes to have it pronounced attic, but most certainly there are those of us who see his
I did that on purpose.
Attack more. Yeah. Anyway.
So then what happened is city lost, and then the city decided to appeal. And now we're into the appellate court. At that point, I understood the concept of an amicus, which is where you're not a party, but you're an interested party and you want to have your opinion in there. You can throw your opinion. The court has a discretion of accepting it or denying it. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to point out something that maybe the other sides haven't pointed out, a point that you're trying to clear up for the court. And, again, it's a discretion of the court whether they accept it or deny it. And, also, if they do accept it, they don't have to really take anything in there. They can read it, but they can ignore it, even if they accept it.
Right.
So I spent some time working on it. It was quite clear to me. This is not rocket science. I think you could state that for a lot of law. You can go there. It's quite clear cut.
Yes.
And so I spent some time. I prepared a 46-page one, and you can see it's kind of thick. I got it in flash in front of Richard's face.
Yeah, that's probably what threw him off, because they hate anything past 25. I can tell you that. They hate anything past 25 pages. That's one of the things I've learned about them. And on sub-subjects, they hate anything past, you know, first page. They just don't want to hear it.
Right.
And by the way, you pronounce it amicus. I think I pronounce it amicus, but it doesn't really matter. You say
right.
Tomato, I say tomato. The amicus curiae is friend of the court.
Yes.
Is what it means.
Yes.
It means, look, while these two guys are talking about this, I'd like to point out, you know, this over here.
Exactly.
And so you should have standing to bring that. And anywhere but the sixth, they'd probably be glad to see you.
Well, the court did accept it.
Oh, they did?
They did accept it, and that was a big day for me. I liked that.
Oh,
they accepted
it.
And then the other side, well, any side can respond to it. They had 15 days to respond. Both the Dental Foundation and the state did respond to me, and it was basically drivel. They dodged my points. They really didn't touch my points. The big, big points I have in there, and they just simply dodged them.
Well, so, the nature of litigation is that the lawyers all know. When the law supports you, argue the facts. When the facts support you, argue the law. And when neither one supports you, that it becomes the last desperate act of a primate, which, of course, is to defecate and just start throwing it everywhere. And
that's another way of saying change the subject.
But, yeah, exactly.
So what happened is then, as you know, in the appellate courts, they have the opportunity to do an oral argument. And the parties, of course, have that right. All three parties will be participating in the oral argument. And amicus has the right to request to participate in the oral argument, which I did. I did the formal paperwork in order to ask to participate in the oral argument, and the court denied it. So I joked around with the reporter from the Register, Paul Ronian, where I told her that, listen, if I could have had a chance to participate, I would have put on a suit and tie. And for people that know me, I'm not a suit and tie person. So for the people of Watsonville, I would have put on a suit and tie. I was hoping to be part of the oral argument. I was denied that, but the case will be heard this Tuesday, the 18th, at the 6th Appellate Court at 1:30 p.m.
Oh, okay. So I assume that you haven't been denied access to sit and watch.
Not yet. I think it's maybe because they don't know any association between me and you. I'm not sure if you reached that stage yet.
No, I've dealt with the Sixth. I'm not a great big fan of the Sixth, but neither is anybody in the state. They're pretty much a laughing stock. But you know, they are to. They are the state courts to what the Ninth is to the federal courts, and the problem is I don't happen to agree with the people's opinion of the Ninth, but I absolutely agree with the people's opinion of the Sixth. They're rampant rubber stampers for anything and everything that comes out of these courts over here.
Now, because I promised to do this just for you, Richard, I'm going to tie in one of the arguments here, and it's an argument that I brought up in my amicus and was not brought up by the other parties. That's why I thought it was an important point. And this will be dear to you because it's tied in with the helmet law. As I understand the helmet law, one of the issues that you've brought up is that you get on your motorcycle and you go off someplace and you ask, whether it's the local police, the sheriff, whoever, hey, I'm going to be going through here and you tell me what helmet can I wear?
Yeah.
Is that basically right?
Yeah. The question is, how can a motorcyclist comply with certainty with the provisions of the helmet law as enforced by you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And their response to you is?
Oh, we'll write you a ticket if it's not right.
Exactly.
Just give it your best shot and we'll cite you if you don't get it right.
So one of the big issues here in this case, and it's one of the biggest issues, is the state does not pick the substance that goes into the water. The state is quite clear about that. The way it works is a city or a public water system, they put on the permit that is submitted to the state what substance they're going to use, and the state says yes or no. So the issue is here is, well, in that case, the city has the right to pick the substance.
Well, yeah. Why don't they just add water to the water and be done with it?
Why not just? Well, I mean, the issue is of the you have to if the state's saying you have to put fluoride, does the city then have the right? And I claim they. I am so clear that the law says that yes, they do. That the city has the right to say, hey, we're only going to add a substance that's been proven to work, or else we're going to get one that doesn't contain lead and arsenic, like the one they're proposing to put in the water does. So that's a big point here.
Got it.
So now we can turn the table in the same way that you have done, very efficiently, I'd say, in arguing your issue with the helmet law is, I want to go to the state. We all should go to the state, and we want to point our finger. And I'm pointing my finger at Richard right now. I know I shouldn't do this.
But, not at all. No problem.
But we are point the finger to the state and say, you tell us. You tell us which substance fulfills the claims that you're making. You tell us. You tell us which one is proven to work to fight tooth decay.
Oh, they hate that. They hate it when somebody does that. You don't know what enemies you've made with them, but it is absolutely the most reasonable.
And it's exactly
brilliant.
That
brilliant.
Aspect of it is exactly like your issue with the helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they
absolutely.
Will not. Instead, they'll say, no, you pick it and we tell you
whether or not you got it right.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a fine connected. And there's no place that you can go and find it written down. That's pretty amazing. Is there, Marie, we were talking about a natural fluoride earlier that the one that used to,
calcium fluoride.
Yeah, is there a problem with calcium fluoride that is less of a problem than there is with the type of fluoride they're probably planning to put in the water down there in Watsonville?
It's basically 7% of the people in the United States that drink fluoridated water are drinking the natural occurring calcium fluoride. It's not something that the water people add to their water. It's just simply there as a contaminant in their water. But it's okay if it's there up to 4 parts per million.
So as a fallback.
Beyond that, they have to actually remove part of it.
Well, but as a fallback position, then, if the city of Watsonville is actually going to be mandated to do all of this.
Yeah, they can find some way to use a calcium fluoride that doesn't have the lead and the arsenic if they wanted to, of course.
And then that could be the least harmful of all the options they're being forced to face.
And I really, Nick, that's a wonderful analogy that you drew there between the product and the helmet situation.
That was for Richard.
Well, I enjoyed that. It's very true and right on.
Oh, yeah, it's such a – well, it's absolutely right because
–
It comes down to, this is where I hung them up on that subject, is, okay, you want me to wear something, tell me what and why, and where you get the authority for it, and I'm off and running. And that's exactly what Nick's question is what, okay, tell me something that works, you know, and show me that it works, and then we'll talk. And their refusal to do that should pretty much send a red flag out to anybody that's paying attention.
Exactly.
Well, you know, they ain't got nothing like that, and they ain't going to have nothing like that. So they need to kind of back off their little game plan.
And I'd like to add that for the FDA approval of any fluoridation substance, the FDA wrote a letter to Congressman Calvert a few years ago clearly saying that fluoride as a mitigant for disease, a preventive, as, you know, blah, 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 on and on and on, is a drug. But they also say, well, but we don't have any authority over water treatment chemicals. The point here is that the manufacturer who provides these fluoridation chemicals definitely can apply to the FDA for of approval of safety and effectiveness. If they can do it before they drive the truck to the gate of any United States city.
Look.
And there's nothing stopping them. It clearly is a drug. It's used to treat human beings and mitigate disease. I mean, in other words, they get the approval before it's added to the drinking water.
Yep.
And that is the point that the dentist in their mercury-breathing bliss refuse to acknowledge is that fluoride is a drug. Of course it's a drug. It's a prescription drug. But the chemicals for the water need to be approved by the FDA.
By the way, that's never going to happen. And let me tell you that, again, not to beat the comparison to death, the problem with the helmet law is that everybody out there thinks that there's such a thing as a DOT-approved helmet. And they run with that. And the fact of the matter is that they also will never approve anything that they're prepared to stand behind as a helmet. Unbelievable. And FDA will never approve anything. It's for reasons a little bit complicated, but we'll cover that when we get back. We got a break for another commercial. Maureen, you going to hang around to the end of the show?
You bet.
Okay, I've learned how not to lose you now, so hold on a minute. We'll be right back. We're going to do a couple more commercials, and then... I didn't cut her off. Oh, man.
She'll call back.
Okay. I can't believe I did that. Okay. If you want to run those spots now.
It's a cycle of pain. People with complex dental problems are often... It's a cycle of pain. People with complex dental problems are often overwhelmed when they find it'll take countless dental visits to fix their teeth. They go to one appointment to ease the pain, but avoid going back until the pain becomes unbearable again. But it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody, a Santa Cruz dentist and a pioneer in sedation dentistry. I can help you break your cycle of pain. With newer and safer sedation techniques, utilizing a common sleeping pill, I take care of years of dental problems in one visit. And the best part is, with sedation dentistry, you'll be completely comfortable and will feel like you slept through your appointment, remembering little or nothing about it. Call me, Dr. Guy Peabody, and let me help you break the cycle of pain and wake up to a beautiful smile.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 457-0343. That's 831-457-0343. Find Dr. Peabody's sedation dentistry on the web at www.drpeabody.com or in the Yellow Pages. You, too, can wake up to a beautiful smile.
The following is a real conversation between an OnStar advisor and a subscriber. It took place December 12th, 2003.
OnStar Emergency, this is Vernita.
Yes, I have a vehicle next to me. The person's having a seizure. Also a motor vehicle accident.
All right, sir. I have you on Riverside Street. I am contacting emergency services at this time.
County Emergency Dispatch.
Yes, I'm calling from OnStar. I would like to report a vehicle accident on Riverside Street. Individual is having seizures.
In an emergency, an OnStar advisor can quickly get help to the scene.
I have a dispatcher online. Go ahead.
Someone had a seizure next to me. They also plowed into the car in front. Need emergency services to this location, please.
All right. I'll send them on their way.
OnStar is available on 51 GM models, including the Hummer H2. To learn more, visit your Hummer dealer or Hummer.com.
Would you like for me to remain online until the emergency services arrive?
The police officer's on scene now, so we're all set. Thank you very much.
OnStar, always there, always ready.
It must be, it has to be, with that big sound it's gotta be, KSTO.
Yeah, well, I am your resident moron. Pushed the wrong button, and I did in fact cut Maureen off. Sitting there looking at the computer, just pushed it and sent her away just like I had good sense, right in the middle of a promise not to. Are you back?
I sure am.
Your patience is overwhelming. one thing about it, I won't have a chance to do it to you again. So.
Okay, Richard.
Well, wait a minute. I just said never, and we've already figured out that don't work. Anyway, so you got the case over. Nick, you got the case over in front of the 6th. It's going to be heard on Tuesday.
Yes.
They're going to decide whether or not Judge Robert Attic can pay attention. And
maybe not exactly like that, but yeah.
Well, no.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, can I tell a funny story?
Yeah, go ahead.
You're going to love this story. I almost hate to tell it because I don't know that it was necessarily nice, but I did it. So I'll go ahead and tell the story. I had a situation come up where last year I had an overzealous police officer down in Watsonville. Thought it was real important to fix me. And he did so in a way that was not only not supported by the law, but contrary to clearly established law. So in protection of myself, I moved in, paid the filing fee, and filed a declaratory injunctive relief action against that cop in the city of Watsonville. And what it basically said was that I asked him to order the cops not to enforce the law in a manner inconsistent with clearly established law.
Okay.
Apparently the sentence was too long for Addict to wrap himself around, because he could only get as far as I asked him not to enforce the law. Okay? He couldn't get to the part about in a manner inconsistent. Excuse me. So, I filed a complaint with the Commission on Judicial Performance, indicating my belief that he probably had enough days on the bench and had reached a point in his life where he was no longer able to read and understand a complete sentence. And I did not appeal that up, but I did do that to him. And to be honest with you, I'm not a great big fan of Judge Addict. Sometimes he does some very strange things. I don't know if you remember Sandra Loringer, or the name rings any bells with you.
No.
I believe she is, if not the first, one of the first people ever jailed for feeding the homeless.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
And they arrested her downtown for handing out soup to homeless
right,
people.
Right, I remember the issue.
Broke out a kitchen code that had to do with running a commercial kitchen. And Judge Addict sat on that case. And they offered her a choice between 45 days in jail or probation, the terms of which were she had to obey all laws.
Right.
And apparently there was at least one law she couldn't obey. And this tiny little slip of a woman, and one of my all-time hero freedom fighter, serious, wonderful, wonderful spiritual woman, says, if feeding people is a crime, I'm beyond rehabilitation. And she took the 45 days in jail. And it was, and Judge Addict handed down that sentence. So he's been doing it a while.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny that I'm glad you mentioned him, because, and this comes back to the legal aspect of this case, is going back to what the judge ordered. The judge ordered for the city to either accept the money from this dental foundation or else pay for it themselves. I spent a lot of time in my amicus addressing those two points, because that is an argument now, that, and the state and the dental foundation in their response to my amicus were bringing up the points like I'm bringing up new issues and the court shouldn't look at them because I was addressing what the judge ruled. So for example, the first issue that the judge mentioned was the city has to sign this contract with this third party. Well,
that wasn't part of the original case, was it?
Well, it wasn't. Neither side brought it up.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, the state and the dental foundation were bringing up that the money's offered. It gets into this tricky game where the money's offered and thus the mandate is triggered. But
right.
Do you have to take the money?
Right.
See, that's the thing.
And what you're looking at is a declaratory relief action, so you're asking questions, specific questions, and that specific question was not asked, but he answered it anyway.
Yeah,
right.
And the where it gets tricky here is that the judge is telling the city, well, the money's been offered and you have to take it. Well, now you open up this whole Pandora's box of a charter city's constitutional right to its municipal affairs,
yep,
and to contract law.
Yep.
Contract is a long, long standing thing where
that point was not briefed at the hearing for the original ruling, and there, as I understand what you're telling me, they don't want you to argue it on appeal.
Right.
Because it wasn't argued below,
right,
even though it's
right.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing up this.
And if you folks are listening out there and you think it sounds absolutely asinine and that no system would work that way, trust me, that's exactly what these people do.
And you would know because you've been there. What? It's an issue where I brought up many people is you really, the judicial branch of our three branches is the one that's the least watched.
Oh, and the most powerful.
And the most powerful.
Yeah, and it's the one that we end up having to deal with.
Right.
Because we don't have the power as an individual to sway a legislator.
No.
We don't have the power as an individual to sway the governor.
Right.
Or even the mayor.
Exactly.
You know, they're not going to respond to an individual. It ain't going to happen. Yep. So the only place that you or I have to stand as me, the sovereign, the citizen, the guy, you know, is right in front of that courtroom. And when that guy breaks down, when that guy don't do his job, then the whole system's broken. That is the most broken part of our system. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Exactly.
And I don't know what, I don't know how you make men honorable. I don't know how you make them seek to be honorable. I don't know how you make them want to be honorable. I think that the founders thought they had that handled when they had them take an oath, because that oath is supposed to be to God. And in the days that they were founding this country, swearing to God was pretty heavy juju, because you knew if you lied to God, you were going to be in heavy stuff. But today, nobody cares about that anymore. So I don't know how you drag it out, how you drag it into court and make judges live up to their name, their title.
I think it would be, and it's something you brought up many a times, is people have to step forward. People have to be a little bit more diligent and start watching these judges and start making a stink. I think we've seen it with the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in that Kelo versus New London, the eminent domain.
Yeah.
The whole country is talking about this decision.
Of course.
Because they're seeing that their right to their own home
don't
is disappearing.
It. Well, and what they don't understand is they didn't lose it last year.
Exactly.
I was ringing that alarm 10 years ago when in Venice versus Michigan, when the guy got busted for taking in the services of a hooker. They passed a law in Detroit, which is where this whole thing happened, that says if you use a car in the commission of a crime, such as picking up a hooker, the state got to take the car. The man's wife sued for her interest in the car. And said, I didn't advocate this. I didn't know anything about it. I'm not happy about it. And now you're telling me I lose my interest in the car over it. And the court says, right.
Yeah.
And, the dissent on that by Stevens is absolutely awesome. But that was a setup case.
Yeah.
And it's that little case.
Yeah.
That leads to the bigger decision. The one that nobody notices, that sets a precedent that we have to live with later.
Yeah. But I mean, you're having that. This case is so big, this fluoride case here, because you're going to be losing, charter cities are going to be losing rights, not only to their municipal affairs of their water, but also to their right of contract.
Absolutely.
Once you break that
barrier, it's off and running.
And they're trying to separate the FDA. The FDA is the only agency, the only one that can attest the safety and effectiveness of a drug. So now all of a sudden we're getting it where, well, the FDA doesn't have the right to do this. So who's going to be deciding what goes in your drinking water to treat you? Not to treat the water, to treat you. We're leaving it to politicians?
No, it's the same one that they've tried to assign to figure out what makes a helmet safe.
Yes.
Okay? They're going to assign it to judges, and judges aren't engineers. And, are these men wise? Yes, they are. Are they well-educated? Hopefully they are. Are
they fair?
And honorable, well, fair, you know, fair is kind of one of those elusive things. I've never believed necessarily that anything is fair, but.
Do they legislate?
Boy, don't they ever.
I mean, that's a big problem.
Well, we're running out of time. We got 3 minutes to go, or less than 3 minutes. And Maureen, I don't know how to thank you. You have been an absolute wonderful addition to today's conversation.
Thank you, Richard. It's my pleasure. And anytime you would like me to be on your program, I'll stop everything to do it.
Well, you're just wonderful, and we need more folks like you out there getting this kind of information and getting it together and making it available to forums like this so that people
can be
informed of what's going on around them. Now I'm going to cut you off because I know what I'm doing,
okay.
But I'm going to set you free.
Thank you,
and I'm doing it intentionally. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Maureen. Okay. We'll see you Tuesday.
Okay.
Yep. That's Maureen Jones, and she is she has been our guest today, resident expert or out of town expert on fluoridation, some of the technical aspects, the goods and the bad. Richard wants to know if I'm ignoring him on purpose. That's a little message I got. No, I'm old and stupid. Terrible mistake. I just noticed that Bart called in. So don't take it personal, folks. I'm running on about 7 cylinders, which is not bad since it's a V12 we're operating here with. But we've gotten through this day in pretty good shape. Nick, you are awesome, my friend. There's I think there's a special place in heaven for guys that stand up and fight for the rights of their fellow citizens. I wish we could serve as more of an inspiration. I know because I do it all the time, and there's nothing like it. I mean, I know that you're blessed by the experience yourself. Even though the victories are few and far between, they do happen. And so what we do for our posterity and our neighbors and our friends. So I want to thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to do this show with you.
Thank you, Richard.
I want to thank Michael for letting me come in and do this. Next week we're going to do a thing on watching the Watchers. It's going to be about the United States Freedom Fighter Security Services and the plan that we got going for that. And, I don't know what else to say. I'm going to kick it out in about just a few seconds. Thank you guys very much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. And I'm out of here.
Here's the bee, that's all, folks.